I fell asleep at the table, passed out at the table in the middle of the club as like Ludacris is like pumping in the background.
No!
Dickie, it's your mother. No, you never call me. I mean, I wonder, is your finger broken?
Just don't tell my mother.
It's your mother.
Mother.
No, you never call me.
Just don't tell my mother. Just don't.
Where the hell are you? You are never home.
Hello, my family. Welcome back to Don't Tell My Mother. Oh, I'm so happy to be here. I am back in Los Angeles. Many of you know I spent a week taking care of my mother in Queens, and I am just so happy to be back in the comfort of my own closet. My neighbor's dog is barking in the background, if you could hear that. And we have a great episode for you. This guy is honestly one of my favorite people that we've had on the show. I'm talking about Jeffrey Boyer Chapman. Jeffrey is an actor and a model. He starred in the groundbreaking Lifetime series Unreal with Constance Zimmer, who we've had on the pod. And Constance is like, Jeffrey, get your tushy on the Don't Tell My Mother podcast. And so, just like that, Jeffrey is here. Jeffrey is now starring in the new Disney Plus show, Doogie Kame Aloha, which is a reboot of, you know, one of my childhood favorites, Doogie Howser. He plays a doctor. And, you know, every human on Earth is now breaking their limbs just to be his patient because he's gorgeous and he's funny and he's adorable. He comes on to tell a drunken debauchery tale of New York City craziness, and then his mother, Carrie, joins us from Alberta, Canada, and it is intimate and beautiful and emotional, and I get chills, and we all tear up. Enjoy this gem of a human with a vodka and crayon. Here is me and Jeffrey Boyer Chapman right after this.
Just don't tell my mother.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, Nikki.
What's up?
How are you?
I feel like it's a Monday, but it's a Tuesday, right? What is it?
I think today? It's Wednesday, actually. That's amazing.
Okay, we have a lot to talk about. I'm going to take off my jacket.
Yeah, get comfortable, girl.
All right, here we go. I got free range arm movements now. Jeffrey, you look so cute. Do you usually wear stripes?
I don't have a ton of stripes in my wardrobe, but today they were calling to me.
I've seen you in stripes.
Have you?
Yeah.
That's funny, actually. I can think of, obviously our common connection is Constance Zimmer, and I have a photo of Constance and I that I'm thinking of, and that's one of the instances where I can remember myself wearing stripes. With good old CZ.
You guys are stripe friends?
We're stripe friends. We're everything friends. I mean, we're soul siblings. That woman's my everything.
Jeffrey, you know I love her. And you guys met because you were both starring on the critically acclaimed Lifetime show Unreal. That was your big break. Tell me about your character, Jay, that you played, because I heard that the character that we all saw and watched on that show was not at all what they had originally written.
Well, the original Jay was like, he was straight. He was like a womanizing hustler. I think he was very much based on the creator of the show, Sarah Gertrude Shapiro. She actually worked as a field producer on The Bachelor for years. And I believe it was based on like one of the many sleazy male field producers who she worked with, who would sleep with his contestants. You know, all of the girls who would get kicked off, he would just like kind of take them under his wing and sleep with them. I wasn't necessarily super keen on playing a straight character because it's so important to me to, you know, represent queerness in television and film. But I was so obsessed with Marty Noxon from the time that I was a kid. Buffy the Vampire Slayer was my favorite show of all time. Never missed an episode. Like, had it all recorded on VHS, like a whole collection in my mother's basement. I loved it so much. And I always remember being very intentional, even as a child, pointing at the TV screen, seeing Marty Noxon's name come up on the credits and saying, I'm going to work with you.
Marty was a producer on Buffy, but she was also a co-creator and producer of Unreal.
Yes. Long story short, I got cast. we shot the pilot in Atlanta. The show got picked up. They canned half the cast. Marty called me at home in Brooklyn and said, we love you, but we love you better than the Jay that we had written on the page. So we're going to rewrite the character after you, starting with making him queer. And I just, it was my dream come true.
And so you manifested this.
I manifested it. I manifested it into reality. I created it. I very much believe that.
And dude, speaking of, you are now starring in the new Disney Plus show, Doogie Kamealoha, which is a reboot of the iconic Doogie Howser. I loved that show as a kid. And you're playing another out queer character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How are you manifesting this? This is a queer performer's dream, is to be able to play out people in the world.
Well, I mean, it's very much my intention. It's why I wanted to become an actor, because I didn't have the privilege of turning on my TV and seeing myself reflected back at me in the same way that all my siblings did, all my white friends did. So it's very much been my intention, but it's also, you know, just about timing and luck and preparation and saying yes to the right things, saying no to the right things. And, you know, luckily for years, I was kind of balancing back and forth between the worlds of acting and modeling, so that when I knew that times were going to be slow with acting because there were only so many queer characters being written and so many opportunities for me, I could fall back on modeling as a way to pay my bills. You know, very much in the same way that when I first started modeling, I used like serving and bartending as a way to like fall back on that.
I can totally see you as a server. I can totally see this. Oh, yeah. I feel like you were a good server.
I was a really good server, I started when I was like 13 years old. So it's like, it's very much in me.
Breaking child labor laws, but like, whatever, I'm getting these tips.
Yeah, I know.
Dude.
That's so real.
All right, Jeffrey, let's rewind the tape. So you grew up in Alberta, Canada?
I did.
Adopted?
I was.
At 12 days old, is that true?
Correct, yeah.
Did I just, a little research, a little Jeffrey research. Tell me a little about the family who adopted you.
So my mom was white, is white, and my father is biracial, like me. Okay. So his father was black and his mother was white, but he was raised entirely by his white family in Toronto. So he didn't really have any reference or access to black culture whatsoever himself. And then my parents split up when I was 3 years old, so I was raised by Carrie, my mom, and her white side of the family, and would only spend like every second weekend with my father in Edmonton. And then on the biological side, there's like 15 of us, maybe more. Like my father just like spread that Rastafarian seed all across the continent. For real though. He was like born and raised in Jamaica and had a bunch of kids there with several different women. And then went to Florida, had a bunch of kids there. A couple ended up in the UK somehow. And then he made his way up to Canada, had a bunch more kids up there. Me being one of them, I was the only one who was adopted. Everybody else was raised by their biological family in some capacity. Not all of them had like a super close relationship with him, but all of them knew him in some capacity. And then I was like the long lost child who everybody just kind of discovered like 10 years ago, which was bizarre.
Is he still alive?
He actually just died last week.
What? Jeffrey?
Yeah. I never met him.
You never met him?
No, I've met my biological mother and she's wonderful.
Didn't you meet your biological mom when you were shooting Unreal?
Oh my God. Yes. Yeah. It was an episode that Constance Zimmer was directing, actually, when I got the email on 23andMe of all places.
I have a crazy 23andMe story. I imagine that with your dad, you have a million of them. You must have a whole...
It's so bizarre. Well, okay. I reached out and started looking for her about 10 years before that, and I hired a private investigator. My stepmother worked for the government of Canada. Like, we went through all the proper channels to try to find her, and there was no record of her. And then it wasn't until, like, 10 years after that when I spat in a tube to get my DNA done, just, like, kind of on a whim, not with the intention of finding her. And long story short, they reached out to me and said, you know, that we were a match. And I was literally on set filming a scene with Brita Wool, and I just went over to Video Village where I had my phone in between takes, and I saw that she had contacted me. And anyway, long story short, yes, I met her a couple of months later, and I brought my mom with me. I brought my mom Carrie with me.
You brought your adopted
mom. Yeah, and it wasn't something that I that wasn't how it was planned. It was, I went home to Canada to visit. I knew that I was going to go meet my biological mom. And then it was the day of, as we were about to drive, the hour and a half drive to go meet her. I went into my mom's room where she was getting ready. And I just like sat down like a little boy and burst into tears and said, "Mom, will you come with me?" And she came with me. And it was, wow. I mean, I haven't really thought about this moment in a long time, honestly. It was special beyond words. Having the opportunity for these two women to meet, having the opportunity for me to pay loving gratitude and homage to these two incredible women who, without whom I wouldn't be here, without one, I literally wouldn't be here. And without the other, I wouldn't be who I am.
You wouldn't be where you are.
Yeah. And not just like on a professional level. I mean, personally, my mother was the greatest emotional support system for me. Was, has been, always will be. She's the best.
And by the way, good on your mom for showing up. That's scary.
Mm-mm. I think that a lot of adoptive parents have resistance and, you know, whether it's, fear for many different reasons and boundaries for many different reasons.
Of course.
But yeah, she was always, I mean, my mom just loves me. And I've always been the odd one out. I've always been a little bit different than everyone else in my family and had different dreams and goals and desires and interests and passions. And I'm such a seeker. I've always been a seeker, always asking questions, always wanting to know why and then go deeper and deeper and deeper. And she knew that it was important to me to explore that side of myself. And she also knew that as much as I am like her, and I'm very much like her, the whole nurture versus nature thing, there are qualities to my character that aren't like anyone else in my family. And meeting Nancy, my biological mother, put all of the pieces of the puzzle together in many ways. Her, the spirituality and yoga and meditation and all of that. I mean, it's...
Yeah,
it's
what
her.
Was similar.
It's she's a hippie witch. She's a
hippie witch.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your mother, about Carrie.
Yeah. Oh, Carrie. She is truly the kindest, most honest individual that I know. Even through like the most turbulent times of my youth and my teen years, I never once doubted her love for me or her support of me. She was obsessed with sports, met my father when she was in her 20s, who was a professional softball player. Uh-huh. They fell in love. They had tried to have kids for years because she just desperately wanted to be a mother.
Yes.
She couldn't. So she applied for adoption and something that is just, I look at her and I just, I don't share this in her, and I wish that I had this quality for character. Like, she just didn't, she just so desperately wanted to be a mother. And she didn't care where they came from. She didn't care what race, what gender, what age, whatever. Long story short, they got me with less than 24 hours notice.
Holy shit.
Yeah, long story short, the social worker called her on a Friday evening and said, "We have a little boy. Can you come get him tomorrow?" And she said yes and came and got me at the mall the next day. I was just reading my adoption papers, actually.
Have your adoption papers?
Yeah, right
what does
here.
It say?
And it says right here, Centennial Mall is where they came to get me.
Where is that?
In Edmonton, Alberta. But I guess it's where the social worker's office was.
Jeffrey!
At the mall. So my parents got me at the mall and they didn't get a receipt.
But
so they
doesn't that sort of track?
Yeah, like, it does. Yeah, it does.
Can we shift gears to story time?
Absolutely.
So tell me the story. I know it takes place when you're modeling in New York.
Oh, yes.
Jeffrey, tell me everything.
This is the time that I dressed to impress in New York City and ended up doing the exact opposite.
We'll be back with Jeffrey right after this.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Oh my gosh. Well, see, the reason why this story sticks out to me is because, I spent a lot of my teen years doing things I shouldn't have. I spent a lot of my teen years kind of trying to numb out and partying and drinking and smoking a ton of weed and doing mushrooms and experimenting with acid and like all of those things. And got away with it for the most part. But when I started modeling and left home and started doing it like as a full-time career, I very much put that side of myself on the back burner. I was so focused and dedicated and driven that I just knew that I couldn't waste time being hungover. I couldn't waste time acting a fool in a club. So my family started to come visit me, you know, at different points. My mom had come to visit me and my dad had come to visit me. And then my older sister, Aurora, and my chosen sister, a friend of mine named Jessica, who I've been friends with since we were 14, came along. And they came to visit me in Brooklyn. And I remember them arriving at my apartment in a taxi, coming up, showing them around the apartment, having some hummus and some vegetables, little crudité plates, like, yes. You know, just like some noshes. And decided we were just going to take it easy that night. And they must have been tired. So we're just going to, you know, jump on the subway and go to Park Slope and have a like nice quiet dinner, then go home.
Yes.
So we do that, go to the restaurant. And I remember eating really light. And I just remember eating really light because it was so hot. It was like one of those like thick heat,
thick New York summers.
City days. Yes. Yep. And so, you know, you don't really have much of an appetite for anything.
No. And then you're on the subway and it smells like old onions. Oh, and it's like, it's just oppressive.
Yes.
Yeah. Totally.
So,
takes me
so
back.
So I remember being out with him at the restaurant, just eating really light and having a salad or something. So at this point, I really didn't have much in my stomach. I had the vegetables at home, the salad at the restaurant. I thought we'll go home, back to my place. We'll have some popcorn and some chocolate, and we'll just like watch a movie and chill.
Right.
While we're at dinner, an old friend of mine, one of my first childhood friends, named Randy, who was from Alberta as well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She had moved to LA about 5 years before. Mm-hmm. She came from a very well-to-do family. Her family owned an oil company that my stepfather worked for.
Wow.
And so there's always kind of like this is, as much as I felt like Randy's equal, because we'd been friends since we were kids, there was always like this seed of having to impress the family, like always having to be my best and impress the family.
To impress Randy's family.
Yes, correct. So she was visiting New York and she messaged and said, "Hey, I'm here with my new boyfriend, David, who's also super well-to-do and owns like 6 hotels in Los Angeles." And so I was like, okay, you know, I don't go out anymore. I can be such like a fuddy-duddy when it comes to like finding fun. Like I wouldn't even know where to begin looking in New York at this time. This is an opportunity. I want to show my sister and Jessica a good time. They go out way more than I do. My sister's kind of a partier in that sense. I was like, you know, this is the chance. It's not ideal because you guys just got here. You're tired. It's so hot out. We're not ready. We didn't eat, but like now or never. So we jumped on the subway, went back to my house, changed really quickly, jetted into the city on the subway to Chelsea, to this club called One Oak. And, you know, I remember just my sister and Jessica just being so in awe of the environment. I mean, it was like this like super bougie club, line around the block. We didn't have to wait. We just walk right in.
We're
ushered by the concierge.
How did you get in?
Well, because David and Randy had a table.
Oh,
they had
God.
A table. And so we just, you know, arrived and dropped their names and they ushered us to the back to their table, where I got to meet everyone for the first time. And, you know, David and his friends, and introduced my sister. And so I just remember being so focused on like having a good time and like, I'm here, I'm committing to this. I'm going to like just go all in and, you know, and just like be the life of the party. So I started drinking really quickly, in large quantities. And it was, you know, it was so hot. I remember wearing this like black button-up long sleeve shirt all the way up to my collar. I was wearing this like, you know, this bucket hat, like looking so cute and looking
like
this
little model,
like,
weren't you?
I know, this little fashionista in New York City, but it was like totally inappropriate because it was so hot. It was like a sweltering August, you know, evening in New York City. So we see Randy, we meet David, and then they introduce me to their friend. I believe his name was Brent, and he was so beautiful. And he was a former model turned photographer, and he was around my age. And it was the first time that I'd met someone who I was physically attracted to, that I had a lot in common with because he had modeled for years,
yes,
who had broken away from it and was doing something other than modeling, was doing something really creative as a photographer. He was really good.
That's cool.
You know, it was just all of those things. He kind of just represented like the ideal to me.
What did Brent look like?
Oh my gosh. Just think of like, so like an Abercrombie and Fitch meets like Hugo Boss model, just like chiseled jaw, 6'2".
Oh, wow.
Dirty blonde hair, you know, stubble on his face, you know, not super muscly, but just like, you know, just like in toned shape, just, yes, like a really beautiful human being with these big soulful eyes and a really beautiful smile.
Look, I'm turned on for this guy. I want Brent.
Yeah. So I very much remembering like abandoning, like meeting Brent and like having this connection with him and seeing that he was intrigued by me. I didn't know if he was attracted to me or if he just wanted to, you know, be friends, whatever, but he was like drawn to me. So I remember very much like abandoning my sister and Jessica and being like, y'all have fun, like stay at the table, like drink, make friends, kiki, dance, do your thing. Brent and I stepped right outside near the table into this open air space,
yeah,
but outside where it was not air conditioned. And we were leaning up against a wall and we both smoked cigarettes at that time.
Oh, God.
I don't know if he still does, but I know. But I smoked. I was like a cliche model.
For
I smoked
lunch.
Cigs. I smoked a lot of them. Oh, God. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, girl. They were everything. Awful. So I remember like standing outside for about, I don't know, half an hour with him, leaning up against the wall, kind of inching closer and closer together as we are talking and sharing our life stories. And, you know, I'm just like pounding back the vodka and cranberry at that point.
Oh, right,
and
because you had a table, so it was all free.
Exactly.
Oh, dude, so, what were you drinking?
Yes, there's just like, there's bottles of Belvedere and Don Julio and just like anything at your disposal. It was right there, just like literally at arm's reach. So I'm like, you know, like as I'm standing there talking, I could just reach inside to the table and grab whatever.
And of course you're going to like drink it because like you need to do something with your hand. I mean, you're one
Correct.
Hand smoking, one hand drinking, like you just need to keep busy.
Correct.
I know, I'm the same
and
way.
And it was so hot.
Yeah.
It was so hot outside.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was wearing that long sleeve button up black shirt all the way up to my neck. So I was hot. I was just trying to stay hydrated, girl. So I can say I'm pretty composed when it comes to drinking. Like, you know, not a lot of people really know when I've had one too many.
Right.
So I thought that it was really holding my, yeah, so I thought I was really holding my shit together and doing a great job. And all of a sudden, you know, as Brent and I are just, you know, as the evening's going on and we're getting closer and closer physically and emotionally to each other, all of a sudden the world starts to spin around me and it just wouldn't stop. And you know what that's like when you get like the bed spinners or whatever
horrible.
It is. Like once, it's like being motion sick. Once it starts, it's really hard for it to stop. So I excuse myself for a moment and say, you know, just pardon me, I'll be right back. I need to go to the restroom. Stumble inside. Make it a couple of steps before I realize there's nowhere for me to go. I don't even know where the restroom is. The music is pumping. My body is so hot. I'm profusely sweating. It's just like, it was a mess all of a sudden. And I look over and I see Jessica and Aurora, my sister, dancing and smiling at me and kind of like quizzically looking at me like, what's going on? Where were you? And I put my hand up in the air like, just wait, just
leave.
Wait. And I reach over to the table and grab a carafe, like a glass carafe of cranberry juice and projectile vomit into it.
No!
In front of everyone. Yeah, in front
Jeffrey!
Of everyone. Brent included.
You
in the middle
into
of the club
juice?
At VIP. Yes, meeting Randy's partner for the first time, meeting Brent for the first time in front of everyone. So my sister grabs me and, you know, just kind of like guides me down to sit on the bench at the table where I continue to, you know, to vomit for the next few minutes. And I fell asleep. I fell asleep at the table, passed out
Stop
at the
it.
Table in the middle of the club as like, you know, like Ludacris is like pumping in the background. Some like, you know, some like cheesy R&B, like the least likely pace for somebody to fall asleep in public. I did it. Passed out right in the middle of One Oak. The next thing I know, I don't even remember the rest of the evening in the sense that I remember waking up and everybody was gone. My sister and Jessica were still there, but everyone else was gone. So they take me home in a taxi, and I remember, you know, it being like a struggle to get home because we were all had to go all the way back to Brooklyn, and they didn't know their way around New York. They hadn't been. And
where are we, Jeffrey? Where do you live?
Exactly. It was before Uber. It was before, you know, like we just like type in the address and go. So it was like, it was a struggle getting back there. So we got back to my apartment. Oh, and I remember at that time I only had one, it was a big one bedroom apartment, but I only had one air conditioning unit and it was in my bedroom.
In the window.
So I went in the window. So I went into my bedroom and passed out while Aurora and Jessica were like left in the sweltering heat of the living room after taking care of me all night to like pass out in a pool of their own sweat. I felt really, really bad at the end of the night. And I felt bad that my sisters had to take care of me and that, you know,
embarrassed.
I felt terrible. But then, you know, cut to 2 days later when my older sister Aurora had a disaster of an evening herself. We went to this I think it was called Lips. It was a drag queen.
Dude, Lips was a drag queen dinner restaurant.
Yeah, the dinner show. So we went there for dinner, and my sister, you know, had a little bit too much fun dance partying with drag queens, and essentially had one of those nights herself where she was, you know, belligerent in public. And, you know, I remember her sitting on like the curb on 43rd Street and 7th Avenue, crying her eyes out because I made her leave the club earlier than we should. I don't remember, but she made a complete like fool of herself. And I was like, this feels right. Yeah. This feels much, this is much more in alignment with it. Yeah, everything's right again in the world. This is how things normally go.
I'm telling you, being
the caretaker.
Jeffrey, we've all been on the corner of 7th and 43rd. You know what I mean?
Girl,
like, we have all been.
Girl.
We have. Wait, did you ever see Brent again?
I ended up seeing him. I ended up seeing him again maybe 4 years ago in the south of France at Randy and David's wedding.
Shut up. Randy and David got married?
They got married. They're still married, yeah.
Wait a second.
And I don't.
Did you hook up with Brent?
No, I was in a relationship at the time.
Damn it.
But I remember, I don't even think, I was too embarrassed to even acknowledge it.
But like, Jeffrey, you were a famous actor. This was on him to try to impress you. I think your mother's here.
Is my mom here? Yes!
What's her name? Carrie?
Carrie. Yeah, Carrie.
I'm really excited to meet Carrie. Is there anything I should know? Any rules of engagement?
She's the best person on the planet. Anything goes. I just always encourage her to be herself. She always gets really nervous having to do anything like this, having to be put on, have the spotlight on her.
Okay.
But I just always remind her, you're the best person on the planet. Just be yourself, because that's all we need.
All right, Jeffrey, let's call your mother.
Yay!
Carrie!
Hi, Mama.
Hi.
You look so beautiful.
Carrie, you look so pretty.
Oh, you're always so nice, Jeffrey.
Hi, Carrie. Carrie, where are you coming to us from? And thank you for being here, by the way.
Oh, very, very welcome. Red Deer, Alberta.
Are you in the childhood home that Jeffrey grew up?
No. No. Jeffrey grew up in many childhood homes. This was not one of them.
What was Jeffrey like as a kid? Don't lie. You don't have to make him look good.
Well, he always looks good, but what?
That's true.
Jeffrey, when he was little, he liked his mom and he liked his sister and was very curious and very smart, especially about math.
Really, Jeffrey?
Was, past tense.
Okay.
But thanks, Mom.
Well, we would go to the bakery and get a number. And he was only about 3 or 4 years old, and he knew when our number was coming up, the one before and the one after.
Jeffrey.
Yeah.
I'm a prodigy. I mean, I don't know why I wasn't playing Dookie personally.
Well, they would have had to do the show a few years prior.
Oh,
that's a ring. You say I'm too old. Burn. Truth, though.
So Jeffrey told a story today about a time he got super wasted with Aurora. And his other friend, Jess?
Jessica Rowan.
Jessica. Mm-hmm.
She's my other sister. She's very much like my children's sister.
She's a joy.
Yeah.
Jeffrey, can you give your mom just the log line of your story?
Yeah, I'm sure you remember, Mom. It was when Aurora and Jessica came to visit
me in New York.
They came to my apartment in Brooklyn. I took them out for dinner. We weren't planning on going out to a club that night, but then Randy messaged me and said, David and I are in town from Los Angeles. Come meet us at the club. And I wanted to show Aurora and Jessica a good time. And so I drank really a lot of alcohol very quickly. And, you know, I don't really drink.
No,
partying
don't.
Wasn't really a part of my life at that time.
No.
And got really, really drunk really quickly and vomited into the carafe of cranberry juice at the table and passed it at the table. And Aurora and Jessica had to take care of me. I've told you that story, obviously, right?
That sounds charming.
You know that, though. I told that.
Well, you didn't tell that part. I mean, you told the other part. Didn't you guys go end up at a gay club or something?
No, that was a couple of nights later when Aurora and when we went to the drag queen dinner party. Yeah, and Aurora got really drunk and then was crying on the street. And I was like, this feels more appropriate. This feels right.
Wait, did Jeffrey ever come home really wasted when he was a teenager?
No.
Not that I know about.
Were you strict with him or not really?
Not really.
Jeffrey's like, no.
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 Super lean.
I had to work full time. And when I came home, I just wanted to enjoy them. And so I picked my battles. So they probably got away with a little more than they should have.
Mm-hmm. Is that true, Jeffrey? Is there a time that you got away with something?
Oh, I mean, so many times. My mom was so lenient, but it's like, but it was really our only point of reference was how she was raising us. And because we were with her the majority of the time and with my father every second weekend.
Yes.
That was the only parenting that I knew. But I saw like my cousins around me who had much stricter households. And I remember like one of my aunts specifically telling my mom again and again, like, you're being way too lenient with these kids. You're letting them get away with too much. But we had this really trusting dynamic, and she just created a really safe space for us to be ourselves, which is really lent to our close connection now, because I look at my cousins who were raised in really, really strict households, and they're not necessarily that close with their parents anymore. So
I'm so curious about this, because I'm also from a single mom household, Carrie. Mm. Were you raised in a way where your mom almost treated you like an equal as opposed to like a kid? Was it like a son, or was it like more of a buddy?
No, definitely like a son, but I always wanted to be kind of friends with him too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a single mom thing, by the way. I feel like it might be.
Like I said, not being able to see them for long periods of time during the day, when I got home, I just wanted to enjoy them and pick my battles. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I agree, Jeffrey, there were a lot of people in my family that said that I was too lenient, I was too patient. And I just thought, well, you know, we'll see. And look at how you grew up to be.
Yeah, I'm not so bad, huh?
I'll give you A+ on that one.
What do you think is the best advice, Jeffrey, that your mom has given you?
I think I probably told Jeffrey a few different times when things weren't going well for him. And he needed to figure things out to go with the flow. And not that it was a cop-out or anything, but sometimes you just have to take a look at what's around you and realize once again which is the battle that you need to fight and which is the one you don't need to fight.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm. I got that? Surrender. Yeah. I got hurt. No, it's
surrender.
Great. I got hurt. I got her handwriting tattooed on my wrist when I was living in South Africa when I was 25.
Wait a second.
Because it was another one of those instances where I was like in the thick of it and I was modeling again and kind of just like things were, life was hard. You know, it's not the easiest industry to be in mentally. And so just to have that constant reminder of like, just surrender, just go.
You know how
many
times I practiced my handwriting before I sent?
I cannot believe that your mother's handwriting for surrender is on your wrist.
You pick different letters from different.
Yeah. From different versions. She sent like 6 versions and I was like, I like that, I like that,
A,
D, that, D. Yeah.
Exactly.
I like D.
Yeah.
What about you, Jeffrey? What's the best advice? Or the worst advice? Could be either.
Oh, I can think of some worse.
I don't think there's any.
What?
Oh yeah. I'm curious to hear what you have to say, Mom.
And I don't know why I said it. Probably because it was told to me many times growing up, like cowboy up or yeah.
What does that mean?
That's a, see, I know. I knew that you were going to say that, Nikki. It's like an Albertan, like, Texan saying. Like, man up, man essentially. Up. Like, stop being a pussy, stop being a bitch, man up. And that was that was something that, like, advice that
it was in my family.
Childhood. Not just, not for my
in
mom.
In my family all the time. If something.
Cowboy up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And thinking about it now, it was, to me, it was just an awful way of telling somebody that your feelings don't matter. And I regret if I've ever said that to anybody, because it should not be said to anybody.
Something Joan Rivers used to say, and Melissa Rivers was on the podcast that and talked about this, is walk through the open doors.
Oof. Go where the love is a piece of advice that Danai Gurira actually said that. And it meant so much to me. Danai Gurira. Do you remember? She played Michonne on the Walking Dead. She's an extraordinary actor.
Okay.
But I think it goes back to, like, being othered, being marginalized, being a Black woman in her case, being a Black queer man in my case, of, like, constantly trying to prove yourself and make people approve of you and make you be, you know, just being the ultimate people pleaser. And I think that
lifelong
can really,
struggle.
Yeah, that can really, like, be, you know, be to our detriment and just going where the love already is, which falls in line with going with the flow. It's good advice.
Well, I love to ask this at the end of every episode. What do you two love most about each other? And I can see there's so much love. I mean, honestly, I feel it, truly.
You're going to make me cry, Nikki.
I know. Everybody cries at this. I didn't intend for that, but that is what sort of happens.
Can I go first?
Yeah, of course. You're the mom.
That just means I'm older.
Or just more important. Go ahead.
What do I love the most about Jeffrey? I think his undying dedication and loyalty to the people that he loves. He never wavers from that. In the same token, he has no time for negativity. So those people aren't part of his life. And I admire him so much that he can separate the two and not have that negativity in his life. And I just admire the man that he has become. And I just couldn't ask for a better son or a better person in my life, because he certainly encourages me all the time.
Thanks, Mama. That's really incredibly kind of you. I mean, what I love most about, I'm going to put this in two parts, what I love most about my mother and what I love most about us. What I love most about my mother is her unending capacity to love people. She has such an open heart and really gives people the benefit of the doubt. So often what you look at as naivete is just you being open-hearted. You're one of the most honest people I've ever met in my entire life. You cannot tell a lie to save your life. You're one of the most non-judgmental people I've ever met in my entire life. I think the combination of those two qualities of your character created a foundation of safety for me to be who I am. Although you may have been given all the reasons in the world to try to make me something that I'm not based on other people's opinions, you never did. I've never doubted your love or your support for me. Even at times where you probably should have doubted me. And what I love most about us is that I've been to several mediums and psychics who independently of one another have told me that my mother and I have been in, lived many lives together, and our souls continue to travel together in each incarnation. Yeah. And I know it to be true. I 100% I know it to be true.
I have chills actually right now. I really have chills. Carrie, I'm really happy that you came all the way from the Texas of the North. All the way from Canada. It's really cool.
Well, I'm glad that you invited me. I'm glad technology allowed me to figure this out. So thank you.
You did a great job, Mom.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on here, Mama. I love you so much. This was so special.
I love you too, pal.
Thanks, Mama.
Guys, we got so into this, we forgot to have everybody say the tagline at the end of the episode. So it's just me. If it's not one thing,
it's your mother.
Thank you for listening, my friends. Like and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a review. We love to love you. We love to hear from you. We are codependent. We need your adoration. We need it right now. Follow us on the socials at Don't Tell My Mother and at Nikki Levy. We will see you next Tuesday.
Mwah. Don't Tell My Mother is created, hosted, and executive produced by Nikki Levy, my daughter. The show is executive produced by John Cryer. Oh my God, I love him. And Lisa Joyner and Jody Zuckerman Weiner at Discount Sushi. Our producer is Liza Glukoff. Co-producer, Andrew Condon. Mixed and edited by Donovan Bullen. Theme song by Donovan Bullen and Joe McKenzie. Distributed by Acast. Now go call your mothers.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.